WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latte from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
I'm Jimmy Floyd in for Brian Lehrer, and the United States decided yesterday to release 30 million barrels of oil from its Strategic Petroleum Reserve, the country's rainy day stash of oil. A handful of other countries also agreed to release a total of 30 million more. It might sound like a lot, but it's actually a small increase. The U.S. imports 10 million barrels a day, and the world consumes 84 million every day. But this release has a big impact on the market. Yesterday's announcement succeeded in driving down the price, a much-needed relief in a market that was sent into turmoil when Libya's oil stopped flowing a couple of months ago as the country descended into civil war. But is this really what the reserve is for, to drive down prices? To explain how this rainy day stash works and how President Obama decides when it's raining and when it's not, we're joined by Jacob Goldstein, correspondent for NPR's Planet Money team. Jacob, welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. So first, a few points of fact. What is the Strategic Petroleum Reserve? I imagine for a lot of people, this is the first time we're hearing about it. Where is it? How much is there? And have we ever tapped it in the past?
So as you said, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, or we can just call it SPR, so we don't have to keep saying Strategic Petroleum
okay.
Reserve. It's a rainy day fund that the U.S. created it in the mid-1970s after the Arab oil embargo of the early 70s really threw the U.S. economy for a loop. And, of course, oil has this very particular place in the global economy and the U.S. economy. It's essential to us. We're heavily dependent on imports. So there really is this risk we face that, you know, if there is some cutoff in oil supplies, it can throw our economy for a loop. So that was the rationale for creating it. It was created in the mid-70s, and it wasn't used in its emergency capacity actually until 1990. So there was a long time when we had it and we didn't really use it. The first time that 1990 use, that was the first Gulf War. Then the second time we made an emergency use of it was after Hurricane Katrina. And then this one just yesterday, that's mm-hmm. the third. So we really haven't done this much in the past.
Huh. So if it is a rainy day fund and President Obama thinks it's raining, why? I mean, if we tap the reserve following a hurricane like Katrina, that's a discrete, acute, extreme emergency situation. But what's the emergency now? Libya, of course, is in the news, but prices are actually down as compared to a couple of months ago.
Yeah, that's a very good point. It's a question a lot of people are asking. I mean, you know, it just in terms of sort of emotional response, I think it would have this move would have gotten a better sort of emotional response 2 months ago when oil prices were peaking. Was March 2-3 months ago when oil prices were peaking and everybody was sort of freaking out. Since then, we have seen prices fall, and there is some head scratching today of why now. So there are a few reasons, both explicit and I think if you read between the lines, for why now. One is we're going into the peak consumption season, the summer, basically summer driving season, which for the Northern Hemisphere, for the U.S. and Europe, is the big consumption season. So there's some worry that prices will go back up, that supplies will get tighter. That's part of it. I think also if you sort of read between the lines of what people have been saying in the last day, it just took a long time. And by a long time, I mean, you know, weeks, maybe a couple of months to work out this deal. Clearly, you know, this isn't just the U.S., as you mentioned at the top. This is a bunch of countries around the world coordinating to release supplies. So they all had to agree. And it's also clear from the reports you see that the U.S. approached Saudi Arabia before doing this because, you know, the Saudis are a U.S. ally, and they crucially are the country most able to expand oil productions. And they have said they're going to do that. And so clearly the U.S. didn't want to alienate the Saudis with this. So I think there was some diplomacy that sort of took a while.
Well, it is a complicated global market. Let's talk a little bit about some of these other countries. You mentioned Saudi Arabia. Say a little bit more about how the Saudis fit in. And what is this International Energy Agency that you read about in every story of yesterday about what happened?
So we can think of the International Energy Agency as sort of the importer's counterpart to OPEC, right? OPEC is the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, and they all get together and try and work things out, although they clearly fight amongst themselves and had a very public fight fairly recently. But you have OPEC on the one hand, and then on the other hand, the idea of the IEA is, well, if all the oil exporters are going to get together and kind of, you know, try and work to their maximum advantage, then we all, you know, big developed countries that rely on imported oil, we should also get together and work together. And the IEA also was founded in the mid-70s. This was clearly a sort of historical moment when the world realized, oh, wow, we're really beholden to oil imports. We better sort of get our act together here.
Well, these are just big cartels then, right?
Well, OPEC is certainly a cartel. I mean, I don't think you would call buyers a cartel. They certainly don't go on a buyer's strike, although this is clearly, you know, a competitive move. Clearly, if you're an oil exporter, you have less power if the people who are buying your oil are releasing oil from their reserves.
So let's talk a little bit more about the Saudis and precisely what's going on here as of yesterday. There's not really a scarcity of oil, right? I mean, the Saudis, in theory at least, could just flip a switch and the oil would flow. It's more about the market and reducing the price, isn't it? Explain how speculators fit into all of this. And I guess you just referred to OPEC. That has a lot to do with it.
Right. So let's start with OPEC and the Saudis. So there was this OPEC meeting recently where OPEC as a whole did not agree to expand production to make up for the shortage out of Libya. But Saudi Arabia sort of went out on its own and said, we don't care what OPEC says. We are going to expand production. Saudis, you know, everybody always says, well, the Saudis are the one country that can essentially ramp up supply at a moment's notice, as you said, at the flip of a switch. It's not entirely clear to me that it's quite as easy as flipping a switch. You know, I haven't seen the most recent data on their production, and I don't know how, you know, that data is somewhat opaque. So I do think releasing these reserves is pretty close to flipping a switch. It takes about a week. So my sense is, you know, in the sort of medium term, output from the Saudis will be increasing. This is obviously a short-term move. This is a one-month move, this release.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you mentioned speculators. You know, everybody likes to complain about speculators when oil prices are going up. Speculators bet on the oil price in both directions. People don't complain about speculators when oil prices are falling, although, you know, presumably they are playing both sides. I think that the role of, I mean, and clearly, obviously, there is speculation. You know, there was this case recently brought against people for manipulating the price. So that happens. But the oil market is so massive, just in terms of real use of oil. It's not the kind of thing like, you know, the cocoa market where one hedge fund guy can buy up a huge stock of the world's cocoa and really manipulate the price. I think the role of speculators in the oil market, it may be somewhat overstated because they're convenient villains, basically.
I ask only because I could hear my listeners asking.
No, certainly true.
I knew
true.
The speculators would be on the forefront of everyone's mind when they heard about this story.
That's true. I mean, I think it is useful to think about speculators both when prices are rising and falling. Mm-hmm. You know, similarly in the stock market, everybody complains about shorts who are driving stock prices down because people often like rising stock prices. But they don't complain about speculators driving prices up. And this, you sort of see the converse in the oil markets, right? I mean, oil prices you know, fall through the floor sometimes, and speculators may play some small role there. Oil prices go through the roof sometimes. Speculators may play some small role there. But there's this huge physical, real oil market that is largely driven by supply and demand and by, you know, people's best guess as to what the future is really going to be.
And after yesterday's news, the price did drop by about 5%. Can you explain the ripple effect of that? It's not just going to have an effect on the crude market. It could have an effect on the price of food and airline tickets and across the board for consumers as well, correct?
Absolutely. And of course, gas prices. And you know, really, this is a lot about gas prices because people see them so much, right? I always feel like gas prices, I mean, gas is a huge expenditure. I think we forget that sometimes if we live in New York City, right? You buy your Metro card at the beginning of the month and that's it. But lots of people do spend a lot of money on gas. But I think more than that, you see the gas prices, right? They're displayed in huge letters. You know, it's not like you turn on the TV and it says, oh, by the way, you got to pay $100 for your cable bill this month or something. And I think it has a disproportionate emotional effect. That's one. I mean, two, very clearly and explicitly, this move, this release of reserves, is about the economic recovery and is driven clearly by worries about the economic recovery. Clearly, the economy has been slowing. And as you said, the price of oil has profound ripple effects throughout the economy, really. You know, you see it in the price of food and everything that has to be transported, as well as the more direct costs.
But is it a slippery slope, Jacob Goldstein? On some level, I would think once you start tapping the reserve, and I'm really just a layperson reading this as anyone comes to a subject new to it, but it seems that once you start tapping it, how do you stop? Wouldn't you have to replenish the reserve?
No, that's a really good question. I mean, they will replenish the reserve. You know, there's the question of what will the cost be. It certainly does seem to be the case, as you pointed out earlier, you know, Hurricane Katrina and the onset of the Gulf War do seem of the first Gulf War. They do seem more like discrete events, whereas what we're seeing now is, you know, there's this sort of broad geopolitical thing happening in North Africa and the Middle East. It doesn't seem like it's about to end. There are these worries about the economy, but these worries are years old. So we really do seem to be in more of a chronic setting right now with respect to oil than we did before, where we had these acute settings of a hurricane and a war that proved to be quite a brief war. So I think that is a valid worry. You know, it has been a very high bar to do this, and I think it's fair to ask, are we lowering the bar and what's that going to mean?
Just to make it more relatable, we all are supposed to have rainy day savings accounts. I mean, you even tell kids that you save a little something for a rainy day. The teachers' unions are thinking of tapping their reserves to avoid layoffs. Banks are told that they should have more capital reserves if they're going to take big risks. Even families are supposed to have rainy day funds. So is this analogous to our everyday lives? Is it really that simple?
I mean, it's probably not quite that simple, but I think it's a very fair analogy. I mean, this is essentially, you know, our oil savings account, right? This is not the oil that this is not our oil checking account, right? This is not the oil that comes in and out and we got to make sure it's balanced. This is what we have stashed away. And we say, you know, to relate it to the savings account, if something really bad and unexpected happens, I'll crack into the savings account. And I guess, you know, one question here is 30 million barrels is a very small percentage of our reserve. The Strategic Petroleum Reserve has more than 700 million barrels. So this is a small segment of it. So if you think of it as just one event, it's not that big of a deal. We're taking this tiny bit out. We'll surely be able to replace it. That's not a worry. I guess to go back to the analogy, it's are we just taking a little out or are we sort of breaking the piggy bank open and now it's all sitting here in front of us and we say, well, you know, maybe we'll get another 30 million because, I mean, A, it's clearly going to take the economy a long time to get better. And B, there are a lot of factors that suggest that the price of oil is likely to be high and to continue rising in the long term, you know, namely the rise of China as much as anything, which is consuming more and more oil at a moment when global oil supplies are not increasing that quickly. And what we've seen is when oil demand increases faster than oil supply, the price goes up really fast and goes up a lot. So it seems very reasonable to say we're entering an era where we could see rising oil prices and more spikes in oil prices. And so we wonder, well, it does make you wonder, what is the future of this reserve going to look
which
like?
Raises the last question I want to ask you. I mean, when do we stop? Do we stop? You know, is 30 million barrels the limit?
Well, the government clearly left open the possibility of tapping more. 30 million is what they've said they're going to tap over the next month. They did say that July and August are the two big months. So this will take us essentially, you know, this is basically a July release that we're talking about. So 30 million is not necessarily the limit. Basically, what everybody said is, well, you know, a few weeks from now, we'll take a look and see what we think and decide what to do next.
Well, maybe we'll be talking to you again in August, Jacob Goldstein.
It could happen. Let's not rule it out.
All right. Thank you very much, Jacob, for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
My guest has been Jacob Goldstein, correspondent for NPR's Planet Money team. I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. Coming up next, a call-in on how to pay for college.